Hello and welcome to Enterprise Linux Security, episode 90. I'm here, as always, with my friend Zhao. How you doing?
All good, Jay. As always, a pleasure being here. Nice title, by the way. Had to mention that. Do you remember Skit in South Park where one of the kids goes with his dad to the bank and he wants to deposit a Bitcoin? Then the bank teller types in the keyboard for a few moments and transferring this, transferring that, funds here, pay this, pay that, and it's gone. And this is basically what happened to a pension fund in Australia. They typed way too much and then suddenly everything was gone. So wow. Yeah, we'll be looking at that today.
Dude, where's my cloud? Where is it? Seriously, where'd it go? We're going to look into that. So a couple of things to get out of the way real quick. The LPI course, my Udemy course, my first official Udemy course is out. You can go to udemy.com and look up LPI Linux Essentials Workshop and you should find it. Also on learnlinux.tv, you can find it linked from there. So please check it out. The 23 video course will get you on board with Linux. It'll be a lot of fun. And also, if you want to support the show in a different way, you can buy some swag. Buy an Enterprise Linux Security shirt. That'd be pretty cool. A DistroHopper shirt, Aptistall coffee. There's all kinds of things at the official shop, merch.learnlinux.tv. And with that out of the way, let's get started.
Okay, so there's this pension fund in Australia called UniSupper.
Super, I think.
Yeah. So this isn't a small thing. They manage over 135 billion with a B in assets, which is quite a lot for my wallet. And they were apparently, for some reason, a customer of Google Cloud. So all of their infrastructure was on top of Google Cloud. And for a reason that they've been quite cagey about it, on the 2nd of May, everything went away. Someone pressed the wrong key somewhere or chose the wrong option somewhere, and all of their cloud assets simply were deleted. And as in, totally deleted, cannot recover. And this means that their 647,000 members couldn't check their balances or make any transactions or move any of that of the money that they had there or something like that. So, yeah, it was quite something.
It's one of those things that I don't like. One of my pet peeves about the cloud, but it's also one of the things that makes the cloud great, is the whole mentality that your servers are cattle, not pets, that they should be able to be, you know, deleted and it shouldn't matter. But I want everyone to know this goes beyond that, because when you're working with AWS, Google Cloud, or any of the others, the whole idea is that your environment should be self-healing, meaning that if a server goes down, you could have a load balancer that directs the traffic somewhere else. Meanwhile, your automation system is replacing the server and putting it back into use. This is how you make a resilient cloud, but all of that fails when the cloud provider deletes your account. That's one thing that none of that can help.
Google has been taking the blame for this, and they have accepted that. So it leads me to believe that it might actually be a bug on Google's side. And they've been using this word repeatedly, where Google Cloud inadvertently deleted the entire account. Inadvertently there being the keyword. Like I said, they haven't been actually forthcoming with the details of what that exactly means, but there was this misconfiguration during the provisioning of the private cloud services, and then some other operation triggered the bug, and that bug caused the entire account to vanish, which is massive. It included hundreds of virtual machines, it included databases, applications, the whole lot. To put some context into this, in 2014, this company called, and I don't want to mislead anybody, this company called CodeSpaces. They were a code development and code hosting company in 2014, and they were a victim of a cyber attack. Again, not what happened in this case. This was not a cyber attack, not a cybersecurity incident. This was just infrastructure being weird. But on CodeSpaces' case in 2014, they had all of their stuff on AWS. And when they suffered that breach, the attackers got into their control panel and deleted all of their databases, all of their backups, and the company went under within a few days. They had no other backups. They had no other way to do business again. So that killed the company effectively. In this case, given the number of people who had trusted their money into Unisuper, however it's pronounced, that could have been catastrophic. Luckily, these guys did something right. They had the backup on a separate cloud provider. And we'll get back into what that was, what actually saved them from losing everything, because that was really, really important and was actually the only way they could get their stuff back on time.
It's a cautionary tale, but it's also, like you said, cloud being weird. I mean, there's a couple things we know. Obviously, if someone at Unisuper was the one that fat-fingered something or accidentally deleted an account, Google Cloud would not accept any responsibility over something that they absolutely did not do. So for them to accept responsibility for it, then I think that obviously means that Google Cloud is the one that fat-fingered something, but we don't know what they did. So we kind of have it narrowed down. It could be inadvertently could mean someone, was talking to a coworker and sat on the keyboard and managed to hit set on the delete key or something. That's inadvertently. But then again, I would hope someone at Google Cloud couldn't do that or wouldn't have someone else's account up on their system. It could be something was pushed and it just happened to hit the biggest account. It could be because Google Cloud can't resist a solar flare. Or, we had an eclipse recently, for all I know. It could be any of those things, but here we have a situation where you have this account, and this isn't just any account. One of the articles mentioned this, that Unisuper is so large, and the amount of money is an indication, but if that wasn't, they were saying an account that large, when you call tech support, you have the CEO on the phone at that point. That's how big the company is. So obviously there's some kind of a relationship there, on account of the fact they're big. And that could even be what saved them. I mean, it's like, oh, don't co-locate. We'll open up a section of our data center for yours as long as you don't tell them we moved off of Google Cloud. It'll be in our data center, but it'll be your servers. Don't tell anyone. You have no idea at this point what's going on behind the scenes. But it is dedication to still be with the cloud provider after something like this happens, I have to say.
Absolutely. And like you said, Google Cloud CEO Thomas Kurian actually came out and answered some questions about this. And he himself assured that this was an isolated incident and it had never occurred to any other customer. Yeah, no kidding. If it had happened to somebody else, everybody would have known by now. But still, even if there are quite a few factors that contributed to this, but even if the customer themselves tried to delete the account, there should have been a recycle bin of sorts for customers this large. Even if somebody accidentally pressed, okay, I want to completely delete everything, it shouldn't immediately completely delete everything, just make it inaccessible. So that if, oh, I absolutely changed my mind and I want to go back and then do this operation that costs millions of dollars, it should be possible to do that.
Right.
And that's actually a best practice for... Again, best practice. And that's actually something that you should consider for your environment. When you're doing changes of this magnitude, or any magnitude for that matter, if you're doing something that will touch any operation that touches any system or any data in a way that's not reversible, try to introduce some wait period there before it actually goes into effect. Tell whatever process or whatever user asks for it that it's done, and then wait for them to change their minds for a couple of days. And if they do, yeah, I got you. I still have your data here. I still have your virtual machine here. I can just restore it in a second. That might save some people a lot of grief. And it would have been great if Google had that facility in place.
Yeah, you are right. I ran into this on Linode one time. I deleted a server I didn't mean to. And obviously, it was only like a two-hour thing. I was just working on this project and deleted it prematurely. It was actually notes for a video. I had notes for a video for something I was about to go over in a video, and I deleted the server before I downloaded the notes. It was terrible. But I went on to Akamai, and there was a way to recover the server. Now, I'm not going to tell people how to do it because I don't want people to rely on this, and they don't hang on to your server for that long. It's a recycle bin is a pretty good way to put it. So they have it. I know other accounts have it. So that's just more to your point. But my big thing here is, you know, I don't have billions of dollars wrapped up anywhere, but I do have a business. I do have servers. I want to know what happened so I know if this edge case is something that a bug report needs to be filed for. If they're using an open source technology and they hit an edge case, then other people that are using that technology for their hypervisors might also hit that edge case. If we don't know what that edge case is or whatever it was that happened, then how do we know that it's not going to happen to someone else? It would be one thing if Google said something along the lines of, you know, internal code that's not based on open source had a problem or something, something that we would know is specific to Google Cloud. But when you're using, you know, open source technology to provide entire data centers, my line is, I want to know that I'm not going to have learnlinux.tv be deleted tomorrow, even though I have backups. Still, is this going to happen to me? What exactly happened and how do we prevent it?
Absolutely. One of the things that was mentioned as being not a trigger, but something that added more fuel to the fire was that they had geolocation replication going on. So they had two instances on different geographies where their data and their applications were always being replicated to. Now, some people will often assume that, okay, I have two copies of this, one in North America, another in Australia, and a third one in Europe. And everything is being replicated across all of them. So I'm saved if something happens to one of them, I can rely on the others. And that's not exactly how replication works. When you do a change on something that's being replicated to another zone, and in fact, this doesn't have to be the cloud. If you have virtual machines being replicated to a different node on your own infrastructure, on your own data center, a change that you do on one is replicated on the other. If you delete something on one, you can't go and delete it on the other because that delete operation happens in both of them. That is a safeguard against catastrophic failure of the entire data center that is not replicated to the other one. It's not a backup. It's not a live backup, as some people often assume. It protects you against some types of problems. It does not protect you against fat fingering a delete.
Right. And it's to a point where even in Proxmox, I have a safety check on all of my VMs. So even when I delete a temporary one, I have to go in and manually uncheck the protection on that. And that's just for me. But for these, it's even a bigger deal. I just really want to know what happened. It's one of those things that I hate in the industries when you don't know the answer. Like, I need to know what happened. What happened?
One thing that we know is that because they were replicating this, the recovery process took even longer because you weren't just uploading the data someplace, you were uploading it there, and then you had to be uploaded again to the other geolocated location. So there was actually, you were uploading twice the data, and it was coming from another cloud provider. So there were lots of data transfers going on to recover all of their systems, and this actually made it slower, made the process slower.
Right.
It reminds me of yet another story, this time with GitLab in 2017. And we've covered this in the podcast before. I can't recall exactly in which episode, but we talked about this. It was an older incident that happened at GitLab where they were trying to create a test environment from their production database. And they were trying to replicate the production database to the test environment. And at some point of the process, something was going wrong and somebody tried to delete files locally on one of the instances and assumed that they were on the test one, and they actually deleted the files on the production one. And the last backup that they had was from 6 hours prior and it was missing some stuff. So there was customer data being lost at that time at GitLab. Ooh. And their CEO stepped up and they apologized profusely and they did the whole number. These things happen. And again, it's in a clear example of the trusting the replication as if it's a backup and it's not. And
right.
It's one of the key takeaways that at least from this case, we know for a fact that that had some implication on the process, even if it wasn't the cause of the process. It at least interfered with the restore of the services. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind. Replicating services to different areas or to different data centers or even across different servers, that will protect you against some types of problems, but it's not a backup. You shouldn't rely on it as a backup because that's not what it is.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, failover isn't backup any more than RAID is backup. because RAID is also failover, technically, if you think about it. It's not backup, it's failover. Now, this is something that's fairly interesting, and I'm sure it's not related, but I just wanted to go on record and say this just in case it is. I've been getting a number of emails from Akamai lately for some of the Learn Linux TV servers that are on a, you know, having some issue. They need to be moved off of this, that, and other. Obviously, that's probably internal hardware over at Akamai and nothing to do with Google Cloud. But part of me almost wonders if, you know, here you have Google Cloud having an issue for these guys, and I'm getting an influx of tickets from Akamai about faulty VMs. So something, I know it's a coincidence, but it's just some days you kind of wonder. I mean, it's weird. We don't even know what's going on, so you never know. Maybe there's some provider, there might be some provider behind all of them that provides something, and it hit Akamai and Google Cloud, and it could have hit them because they're bigger, for all we know.
Or somebody at Akamai and realized what the problem was, and they're trying to prevent it on their end.
True. Oh, that's a good point. Especially if there's an NDA on something, that would make a lot of sense.
They won't tell you, but...
Right.
There's something else that's actually pretty interesting in this. The cloud is a shared responsibility model. It's not just the cloud provider that's responsible for your stuff. You upload it to the cloud and magically everything is secure and nothing fails. And if there's a problem, your cloud provider will fix it. That's not how it works. You're still responsible for your stuff. The cloud provider will provide you with some features and functionalities, but it's up to you to use them correctly, and it's up to you to enable them if that's the case. And they're still your systems. Even if you can't just run to the data center and push a button in an emergency, they're still your systems. It's still your responsibility at the end of the day. And it's interesting to... There's an FAQ section on Unisupper's website for this. Unisupper. I'm never going to get that right. There's an FAQ section on their website, and they have a question there, which is, why do we have a cloud provider? And that's actually one of the most important questions in that list, and there's quite a lot of them. And some of the things that they say is that they looked at factors including increased flexibility, improved scalability, heightened security, user access to ongoing technical innovation. All fine and good. For example, a cloud provider allows us to dynamically increase service capacity, improving performance during periods of high member activity, such as the end of financial year. This is elastic capacity, and this is, in my view, the main draw for the cloud. However, they couldn't resist adding this. We do this just like other companies in Australia do this. And then they give an example of a few large companies in Australia that also use Google Cloud as their provider. What they actually mean there, we have the cloud because others also have the cloud. So we're a cloud customer because others are also cloud customers. Doing something just because somebody else or some other company is doing it, that's usually not the best reason to do something. If that's your rationale for justifying to your shareholders and the people that trusted you with their money, we're doing this because all the other companies are doing it, then there's something wrong with your process. Losing this, losing your instance, that's a side effect of the way that you're approaching IT and that you're approaching your architecture to your systems. You should have a good enough reason for using the cloud, not simply because that's what other companies are doing.
Right. And I say this a lot. This is how you separate a beginner from an expert. And no offense to beginners, obviously, because I was there too. You get excited about something when you're learning, or, you know, and you learn one thing, you're all in on one thing. And when companies, you know, one company's all in on something, then another company goes in on that just to match them. It never works out well. It just, if you're using any tool for any other reason other than it's the best tool for the job, you're doing it wrong, and you are introducing complexity and needless flaws into your system when you shoehorn something that isn't meant for that purpose. And I've seen this at companies where they have an app that's in a container or they're trying to put in a container that wasn't meant to work there. So they're doing Nginx subfilter calls to change the URLs because the programmer used, you know, static paths. I can go on and on and on. I've seen this, okay? You can't force something. And if that's the case here, then that kind of makes sense, unfortunately.
It happens with all the hype, right? Every time there's something being hyped, that's what happens. Everybody decides that that's the best, greatest thing, and everybody has to jump on the bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it with the companies that got lots of market value out of just adding blockchain to their names. That was the same thing.
Yep. And I would just say one thing. The bandwagon is less desirable when you realize that's where the threat actors want you to be. They want you on that bandwagon with all the others. They could pick you off one by one right there on that bandwagon as it drives by. Meanwhile, someone with a custom complex system will just be smiling and waving. It's just the way it goes, I guess.
And it's not like they started all of their stuff directly on the cloud. And they started from scratch directly in the cloud. They actually had their own data centers. They had two data centers that they operated until like 5 years ago before migrating to the cloud. So they already had the infrastructure in place. They could have maintained a local repository, a local backup, whatever they wanted to do, and not have to rely entirely on the cloud.
Right.
I'm not saying that the cloud isn't the solution for some of the problems, but usually when you already have put in the money to deal with the basic stuff, like, I don't know, the utilities, the internet backbone connections, the air conditioning, all the cooling, all of that stuff, and you have your own servers, simply just shutting down all of them and moving the stuff to the cloud. And yeah, now we're only on the cloud and we're going to forget that we always had this here in-house. Mm-hmm. That's an issue. Another issue is that they said that, oh, we're using the cloud because we're not Microsoft or Apple or something like that, and we don't want to have all that know-how, and we don't want to be them. Yeah, but you're managing $135 billion of assets. Might want to rethink that and hire enough competent IT people to manage your systems, regardless of being on the cloud or on premises. And if you already have the ones on premises, maybe don't fire that people. Keep them on the staff because they know what they've been doing for the past few years. Again, this is a pet peeve of mine, simply moving stuff to the cloud just because it's the cloud. Man, if you're in a position where you already have the infrastructure locally, really think twice if you want to abandon that.
It really seems like a lot of mentality out there is like when you learn to use a tool, everything becomes a nail. You're trying to, you know, hammer a square peg into a circle hole is basically what a lot of people do. But it's not even, I mean, at another level, you have the marketing end of things where they're pushing containers, they're pushing this, they're pushing that. And to your point, containers might very well be the best way forward. Virtualization, cloud, insert name of technology here, might be the best thing that's ever happened to your company, and it might be a great fit for you, but it also might not. And the thing is, hybrid cloud is trending right now, and I think there's a very big reason that that's trending. Hybrid cloud is trending, and it's going to continue to trend.
Yeah. Again, we're lacking details on this because they have not been published. We really wanted to have the details on the actual cause for this, because it has to be a sequence of events that's so outlandish that it hasn't been triggered before. And that's really weird for it to happen this way.
Right.
You don't accidentally kill an entire tenant on a cloud provider simply by mistake. Not having that recycle bin functionality, that's something that should exist. But having a completely wipe this account away button, that might not be the best UI experience. If you want to delete an account like this, you should have to have a human involved on the other end. You should have to email somebody or phone somebody or get somebody on a call. And yeah, we really want to kill our account and we want to delete all of these hundreds of virtual machines that we have. And we want to cause all of this disruption. We know what we're doing. So that somebody doesn't come back to work from a late Friday dinner and has drank way too much and simply, I'm going to throw it all away. It can't happen that way.
It's just so amazing. We have this, it's like, we're going to keep thinking about this because we got to know what happened. We have to know what happened. It's a cautionary tale, but I think what it all comes down to for me is that being all in on anything is a bad idea. And I don't just mean with your technologies. I mean, you can't just have all of your eggs in one basket. I mean, this is why some people out there decide to have two cloud providers. Not that it's going to really help you much, because if there's the same backend provider for both cloud providers for one of the other things, you're still going to run into a problem. But you see this, and then you see hybrid cloud. You have, you know, your local data center. Then you have a connection to like a VPN connection to a data center, because you don't want all of your eggs in that basket. But putting everything in one place especially when it comes to money. I just don't see that as a good idea. And they can't tell me they can't afford to not have a physical data center. Okay, this is one business that can't use that excuse. They just can't. They can afford it. They absolutely can.
They absolutely have the resources for that. So they did have a backup on a different cloud provider, but it still took them like 2 weeks to get everything back in order. So you can imagine the amount of data that had to be transferred and then replicated to the other place. One thing that the regular company with that doesn't handle all of this amount of money and has limited budgets and all of that might look into as prevention for this, you might still have tape backups of your cloud stuff. There's this class of tape backups that you can only write once so that they're safe. It's called WORM, write once, read many. They're relatively cheap. 18 terabytes go for about $150 or something like that.
Wow.
So they're relatively cheap to acquire. They will last you decades. And you can keep adding backups to this and adding new tapes and all of that. So in case of an accident, you will have that physical something that you can grab onto and can start over from. That's one option. But again, and this was kudos to whoever had the idea of adding a second cloud provider for the backups. That saved their bacon, and that was a genius stroke when it happened. I'm sure somebody fought him on the decision of having another subscription to another cloud provider.
That person got a raise. That person, whoever suggested something that's going to get him out of Dodge, that person should get a raise. But I do want to, you know, shine some light on the fact. I mean, we're talking about some mistakes that were made here, but I do want to, you know, underscore the fact they were able to recover, okay? That's pretty good considering that a lot of companies out there, if they were faced with the same thing, they would not have been able to recover. So it scares me to think if this had happened to another important financial firm that wasn't as prepared, and it probably will. But as bad as the situation was, they did recover. So we really do have to, you know, give them a round of applause for that. But at the same time, you know, someone else won't.
Someone else won't. And that's why we're actually bringing this up, because it's a cautionary tale. Backups are important. You need to have backups of your stuff, regular backups, and not just the copy. You need to actually test them. You need to make sure that they're restorable, that you can actually read them in case of a problem. An untested backup might as well not exist. It's a pain when you have to create them and you have lots of different systems that you need to pull data from. But on a situation like this, this is the core disaster recovery process. What they had to go through to get everything back in order again, that's disaster recovery 101. It was great that the backup worked. It's a shame that it took so long. But again, I imagine for the amount of data, it was expected to take that long. So kudos to whoever did it. And
yeah.
Something that they mentioned, and this is really nice, something that they mentioned. At some point during the information that they were putting out on why their systems were unavailable, they had this page up telling customers that, we're experiencing problems, this is what's happening, this is what we're doing. At some point on the process, they go from someone to the team. They moved from just someone handling the process to getting everybody, all hands on deck, looking at the problem. And that's actually the right mindset. When it's this order of magnitude, when everything is down, there's no one person that can help you. It has to be everybody, and you have to wake up everybody that you can. And you have to get your team on the cloud provider side also working, because that's why you're paying them top dollars. We really need a postmortem analysis on this. We really need to understand exactly what failed, what part of the process failed. Because not knowing, if you're a Google Cloud provider customer, at this point, I wouldn't touch a single button on their UI. I wouldn't click anything because I don't know what deletes everything. So, at this point, don't use it.
Well, I sometimes not using it isn't good enough because I don't use it. And I kept getting this email from Google Cloud that I need to go through this audit for all of the API calls. There's been no API calls. I have no API client. I have no app. I've never actually created one. But they insisted that I did. And for 2 months, we went back and forth, and they're demanding that I go through this audit with them. but they can't find any record of me ever creating an app. And I'm like, I'm not a programmer. I'm creating videos here, and you know, it's just been a comedy of errors. But that doesn't break systems. That just annoys me and prevents me from getting work done. It doesn't delete data, but you know, this is a lot worse. But I feel like this is one of those episodes we should have like a list of, if your employer wants to do this, then have them listen to these episodes. And if they want to do that, then have them listen to those episodes. Because we can have a list of episodes for why you don't want data in one place, a list of episodes why it's important to patch, a list of episodes that, you know, about ransomware, this, that, and the other. And it's like you have examples when you go to your employer, you're like, we need another data center. Oh, we can't afford it. Well, we can't afford data loss. Listen to this episode, episode 90, where they talk about this, and that'll tell you why I'm right. I wish it didn't come down to that, though. I'm not asking for anybody to be challenging toward their employer. All I'm saying is, you know, these are cautionary tales for a reason. They're literally cautionary tales.
Something that you can also learn from this episode and from Google's response to this problem is how to write a press release without actually saying anything useful. So right now, their response is, both companies are committed to ensuring the reliability and security of their services moving forward, which is a very big wall of text that means absolutely nothing. It doesn't say what they're doing. It doesn't say how they're addressing the problem. It doesn't even say what the problem was. So they're both committed to implementing additional safeguards to prevent future occurrences. Great. Of what?
Right. Exactly. No, I mean, that's just... So I'm here on ChatGPT, and I figured that this would be pretty funny if I would just try to have ChatGPT write a eulogy for a company, like they just had a big problem happen and they're trying to save face. And I'm just trying to see if this is going to sound just like that. So let's see what it says.
I can continue. These measures include rigorous testing and improved configuration protocols to enhance the reliability and security of their cloud services. Again, soup salad. Word salad, I mean. There's nothing there. There's nothing actionable there. It doesn't tell you what you should be worried about, what you should be concerned about, what operations you shouldn't be doing, and what options you shouldn't be selecting. As somebody who writes for a living and who creates documentation and who deals in this type of things every day, we actually try to provide some information to people that they can actually action their something on. It's actionable stuff. It's not just fluff piece to entertain. They really need to come out with a postmortem. And to their credit, Microsoft actually provides good postmortems when they have issues. When they had that cybersecurity breach, they also had this vague wording on their initial response. When they had somebody reading the CEO's emails for a few months, they actually had some vague wording. But after that, they reworded that, and there's some actual information on their text. And that's actually pretty good, because these things don't happen just to them. This was the only incident of this kind that Google says that has happened. Yeah, That's them saying that. That since they don't exactly tell you what it is, you can't exactly go back and check. But happening once and not telling people what it was means that nobody can prevent it from happening at their places, on their environments. And overall, this is just a crappy approach to transparency and to sharing information. It won't hurt them. It will actually make them look more transparent and more concerned with good citizenship on the IT world.
Yep, agreed. And I'm going to read a press release from Acme, a company that suffered a data breach. And this is generated by ChatGPT. So I asked ChatGPT to assume that a company named Acme had a data breach and to write a letter about it. And this is what ChatGPT came up with. At Acme, the security and privacy of our customers are our top priorities. We deeply regret any inconvenience this incident may have caused and are committed to taking all necessary steps to protect our community. We are working tirelessly to resolve this issue and ensure it does not happen again. Acme apologizes for any concern or disruption this incident may have caused and thanks its customers for their understanding and continued trust. Now, if that doesn't sound like every single one you've ever heard.
Yeah. Now you know
it's
how
down to a
creating.
Science.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Acme had a data breach and I just read whatever they would have said. There, you know, there's a spoiler.
So
Oh, gosh. It's so
sad. One of the things that we mentioned on our disaster recovery episode is that you should have a good communication plan. You should tell your customers and you should tell your service providers and that you're having problems in a way that's going to tell them something that's going to be useful for them. For example, how long it's going to take to fix. Is their data has their data been breached or stolen by some other individual or some other group? Not doing any of that really doesn't help anybody. It makes you look slightly less bad because you came out with something, but it doesn't really mean anything. And in a situation like this, when you're a giant cloud provider like Google is, you really need to step up your efforts, not just in what you're doing technically, but also in what you're communicating and what you're getting across. So, yeah, here's a tip if somebody from Google is listening. You really need to step up your game on the communication space.
Yeah, this is not good publicity for you to just accidentally delete stuff. It's not a good bullet point on your website, just saying. We might delete your stuff. Sign up now.
I'm sure that's not in their marketing material.
All right.
Yeah, so let's not drag on this further. Thank you, everybody, who joined. This was an interesting look at an incident. In this case, it wasn't a cybersecurity threat. It wasn't some malicious actor. It was just apparently someone fat-fingering something. Until we know exactly what it was, we can't really tell you what to avoid doing in Google Cloud. But be extra careful if you're doing any activities in their control panels or in their UIs or something like that. Don't push any buttons that you're not used to do. So if it's a new operation that you're planning to do in the coming days, just delay that for a few weeks until we know a bit more about what happened and how they managed to break stuff so that it doesn't happen to you.
Exactly. Well spoken.
Thank you, everybody who joined. It was a pleasure. Until the next one.